Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare,
a podcast for the Shakespeareanly challenged.
And anyone who really enjoys some saucy dick jokes.
Teachers, we might insult you a little bit, sorry. Okay, everybody,
enjoy!
Hi.
Hey, hi, Erin.
Hi, Diana.
Woo!
Woo!
Here we go. We get to continue with Macbeth and no Macbeth, which is great.
He's in the toilet.
Yeah, and we get to see some other really awesome characters. At least,
yes.
Macduff. I really like Macduff. I don't know how I feel about Malcolm.
Well, he is who he is. I mean, raised as a prince and...
And in a dangerous place.
Yeah, angry at his father's demise and even more angry at Macbeth's ascent. Yeah, he's got a lot going on, Malcolm. But I don't like how he behaves in this scene.
No, he's very weird in this scene. But then you get the sense, and then you hear later, that a lot of people have been sent to him as potential assassins. So he's probably getting fucking tired of this, trying to be guarded and scared all the time.
Yes.
So that's got to make a person not welcoming.
Not very trusting.
To say the least. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then who are Macduff and Malcolm to each other, do you think?
Well, everybody in the aristocracy was related one way or another.
Yeah.
Right? And Macduff is certainly a loyal subject of the crown, but loyal to the real line of succession. So, yeah. I mean, they're probably cousins, no?
Yeah, I imagine, yeah. And Macduff was a big supporter of Duncan, right? And,
right,
I mean,
yes.
We're going to find that out. If we didn't know that before, we're definitely going to know it now. So Malcolm probably grew up around him,
yes.
I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get the sense he's older than him, Macduff.
Oh, yeah. Well, Malcolm's young.
Malcolm's a child.
I mean, yeah. I feel like Duncan and Macduff and Macbeth are in the same age range.
Yeah.
And that Donalbain and Malcolm are the generation below that. So, yeah. I mean, if Duncan is 60 and Macbeth and Macduff are in their 50s, you know, that makes Malcolm and Donalbain in their 20s and 30s, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, Malcolm is going to say he's a virgin, so.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's even younger.
Maybe he's even younger, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's 50s and 40s and late teens and 20s.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because maybe he was also just a little too young to inherit the crown yet when his father was killed.
I don't get that sense. Also because they would have had a regent.
Somebody appointed to take care.
I don't know. I think that people didn't live that long.
Yeah, so 50 would have been old, right? Duncan would have been old at 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to present you guys our wonderful friend Cole later in the episode, and he's going to be playing Macduff. And this is a great scene for Macduff because we've seen him a little bit before and heard a little bit from him, but I think here is where we really learn who he is, right?
Yep.
He has such a massive journey to take in the short few pages of this scene.
Yeah.
Incredible. Huge risks, huge challenges. And we get to see, you know, test some of the characteristics that he seems to think he has, right? he's loyal. He thinks he's the only one here who's trying to really plead on behalf of Scotland, the country.
Right.
And it's a risk to come here, right? Because he leaves his family.
He leaves his family, but he is devoted to his country. I mean, he's devoted to his family also, but king and country first.
Because that is going to endure in a way that perhaps family doesn't, right? We don't know.
Right.
We don't know if family endures, but country does.
And he being a lord, you know, having inherited that position, the history would lean toward the protection of the country at all costs.
And I think that he finally thinks he has to be the one to go and talk to Malcolm, because not just anybody will do. You can't just say... Hey, Satan, You go talk to Malcolm. It can't be a servant. It can't be just a low.
No,
right?
It has to be someone that Malcolm respects.
Yeah.
And looks up to.
And that's going to matter. And that Malcolm can recognize, okay, you're taking a big risk coming to me.
Yes.
Because you should be back there pretending to be loyal to the king that is.
Right, because it's dangerous for you not to do that.
If he hears you've left the country, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Right? But Malcolm receives him very strangely, as we said, and he tests him. First, he tests Macduff himself by, like, who are you? How do I know? How do I know you are who you say you are? How do I know you're not here to kill me?
Mm-hmm.
And then he tests him by, like, throwing some weird-ass shit at him about, I'm a terrible person, you don't want me. This is the weirdest scene. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's like, what kind of king would you be willing to accept? Are you going to accept one that's just as shitty as Macbeth just because he has the right line to succession? I mean, there were plenty of kings that had the line to succession who were suck-ass asshole monsters, right?
Yes, absolutely. It often happened.
Yeah.
It still happens.
Yeah.
You know, child raised in the court to be spoiled and entitled and not in it for the right reasons is going to make a shit-ass king.
Yeah. Yeah, not to mention being inbred.
That too.
That too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so this scene has two pieces, right? We have Malcolm and Pidoff, and then we have Ross comes in, and when last we saw our Ross, he was dumping Lady Macduff to her fate.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And so here he is, and he has carried this horrible message to tell his cousin, Macduff.
Yeah.
Because somehow on his way out of the country, running out of the country to escape the danger, he hears that his cousin has been killed.
Yeah.
And all of her family. And all of her servants, and all of her chickens, and all of her cats, and all of her everything.
Yeah, but when he says chickens, he doesn't mean chickens.
No, I know. So we have to remember that from the minute he walks in, he's carrying that load, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Because everything he says has a bit of, there's not usually subtext in Shakespeare, but everything he says has a bit of that in this scene, I think.
Yeah.
And then we have, how does Macduff take the news that all of his family is killed? It's, I think, another piece of the theme of manliness, right? What does it mean to be a man? Are you allowed to cry?
Right. Well, he says, he addresses that directly, doesn't he?
He does.
He does.
Well, Malcolm does. He's like, dude, man up. And Macduff is like, this is what it means to be a man. I am being a man.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Don't fucking question me. This is what man looks like. So I really respect him for that. I think that's amazing. Here we go. Let's tackle it and see what happens. And notice all the shared lines too. Malcolm and Macduff share lines. They are cousins. They are close. They also are cutting each other off. There's like a real sense of hurry here. Macduff really wants to like, let's go, let's go, let's go. We need to get back to Scotland before more people are killed because they're being killed all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of hurry. All right. So Malcolm has received him and he's like, I don't want to be inside with you. So I think he's like, let's meet outside the castle because, you know, where I can see you coming.
Yeah.
Let us seek out some desolate shade and there weep our sad bosoms empty.
Let us rather hold fast the mortal sword and like good men bestride our downfallen birthdom.
Immediately shared line, right? And then the mortal sword, the deadly sword.
Yeah.
Let's get that deadly sword and this phrase, bestride our downfallen birthdom. To bestride on the battlefield was for like a fellow soldier to stand over one who was wounded and defend him from others who were coming forward to kill him. That's a huge image of nobility and honor, right?
And I love that he says rather than kingdom, birthdom.
Birthdom, where we were born.
Where we were born. Right? And almost like there is no king there, so I'm not calling it a kingdom.
Right. And kings come and go, but the land itself, right?
Yeah.
Katie Scarlett is where we, right? Yeah. That's what we need to think about. The country itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Each new morn, new widows howl, new orphans cry, new sorrows strike heaven on the face, that it resounds as if it felt with Scotland and yelled out like syllable of dolor.
What I believe I'll wail. So he cuts him off. But so resounds is just responds like a bell, like resounding.
Yeah.
And like syllable of dolor, similar sounds of woe. So heaven is making the same kinds of horrible cries as the people in Scotland are.
Widows and orphans. Yeah.
Yeah. All of the deprived and bereaved people. Mm-hmm. And then Malcolm starts with what I believe I'll wail. What I can truly ascertain is a true story. I will mourn with you, but I don't know what's true anymore. So that's what we're going to find out here. Yeah.
Yep.
What I believe, I'll wail. What no believe and what I can redress. As I shall find the time to friend, I will. So when I know for sure, then I will do what's appropriate, right? I will wail or I will befriend. I will make friends with whoever is important to befriend, or I will fix it. I will redress.
Yeah.
I will fix it. What you have spoke, it may be so perchance, right? So he doubts him. He's not going to give truth to anybody until he can prove it.
Right.
He's had some bad experiences. This tyrant whose sole name blisters our tongues was once thought honest. You have loved him well. He hath not touched you yet.
Wow. He's like, how can I trust you? You said before that you loved Macbeth, and now...
Once upon a time, you guys all called him an honest man.
Right. Yep.
I love this soul name because it's like just the sound of his name, but also a soul is the sole of your shoe, right?
Yeah.
His name has sunk so low that it's like the bottom of the shoe, right?
Yep.
I love that. Yeah. He hath not touched you yet. So why aren't you dead? Why aren't any of your people dead?
Right.
Foreshadowing. Right. I am young, but something you may deserve of him through me, and wisdom to offer up a weak, poor, innocent lamb to appease an angry god. So I'm young. That's where I thought he might say, you know, I've been a little bit too young to know how things work, right? I may be young, but then I know how corrupt politics work, right? And that you might sell me to him. You might get a reward for handing me over.
Right.
And then there's to appease an angry god is 7. There's 3 beats of silence because I feel like Macduff is shocked. So like, wait a minute, what? And then he responds, yeah.
I am not treacherous.
But Macbeth is. So Malcolm's like, you are his spokesman or could be.
Yeah.
I don't know what you are.
Yeah.
A good and virtuous nature may recoil in an imperial charge. So he's like, you might have good intentions. Once upon a time, but an imperial, that means a kingly, right? Mm-hmm. We do things under king's command that sometimes we can't believe we did.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Circumstances are extraordinary now. So I don't know what you're capable of now.
Right.
And then he feels bad, right? But I shall crave your pardon. That which you are, my thoughts cannot transpose. Angels are bright still, though the brightest fell.
That would be Satan, Lucifer.
Yeah, Lucifer. Yeah. So there are still good angels, even though the best one got corrupted.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Though all things foul would wear the brows of grace, yet grace must still look so.
I have lost my hopes.
Yeah, so Macduff is like, fuck, you are my last chance, man. Who else will I find to save Scotland?
Right.
If you're not going to do it.
Yep.
Fuck. Right?
Yep.
And Malcolm very wisely says, perchance, even there where I did find my doubts. You lost your hope where I found my doubt. I had hope once.
And then they killed my father and I had to run away.
And then I...
And people have been coming after me.
And now I don't believe anything. So now he's going to find out what is your motivation exactly? How did you get away, right? Why in that rawness left you wife and child, those precious motives, those strong knots of love, without leave-taking? I pray you, let not my jealousies be your dishonors, but mine own safety. In that rawness is unprotected, right? Why did you leave your family unprotected without saying goodbye? And then my jealousies is my suspicions. So don't let my suspicions be that you are a bad person, but just because I need to keep myself safe. You have to answer my questions. I have to protect myself. Mm-hmm. You may be rightly just, whatever I shall think.
Bleed, bleed, poor country. Great tyranny, Lay thou thy bases sure, for goodness dare not check thee. Wear thou thy wrongs, the title is afeard. Fare thee well, Lord.
Lay thou thy bases sure. Feel safe in your tyranny, right? Great tyranny. Go ahead. You can feel safe now because this good person, this last good person, is not going to oppose you. Check means oppose. And then thy title is afeared. People will not oppose the king, right? People are afraid of that title no matter what.
And then he's like, I'm out of here. I would not be the villain that thou think'st for the whole space that's in the tyrant's grasp and the rich east to boot.
Be not offended.
Nothing could make me.
Not even if they told me I could have Scotland.
Right.
I don't want to be that person that you're afraid of.
Right.
And Malcolm stops him from leaving, right? Because he could be leaving then, right? Be not offended.
Yeah.
He's like, wait. I speak not in absolute fear of you. I think our country sinks beneath the yoke. It weeps, it bleeds, and each new day a gash is added to her wounds. I think withal there would be hands uplifted in my right. So these are the things I think, I imagine. I don't know how to be sure. I'm not completely afraid of you, but I know what's happening in our country.
But my experience has taught me that people are coming for me.
Yeah. And I think withal means within Scotland. So he says, I think there are still people in Scotland who would be in my court.
Yeah, in my favor.
Raise the banners for Malcolm.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And here from gracious England have I offer of goodly thousands. So he already has.
Troops.
Troops that England has said. You could take them with you and go fight this battle.
Yep.
But for all this, when I shall tread upon the tyrant's head or wear it on my sword, yet my poor country shall have more vices than it had before, more suffer and more sundry ways than ever by him that shall succeed.
What should he be?
So he's saying, when I kill Macbeth, if I get to do that, the next king is going to be worse. The country is going to suffer in more sundry ways, which means a bigger variety of ways. Under the king that follows Macbeth. And Macduff's like, impossible. Who could that be?
But also, I think it's a little bit of foreshadowing there. When I shall tread upon the tyrant's head or wear it on my sword.
Actually, it's Macduff that comes in with the head on the sword.
I know, but I still think that it's foreshadowing of what's to come.
Yeah.
I know it's Malcolm saying it, but I think it's just paving the way.
Yep.
We can imagine it. The whole play is about imagination now. We can imagine it.
Yeah, we can go into Macbeth's head and imagine the end, his end. All right, so what should he be? It is myself, I mean, in whom I know all the particulars of vice so grafted that when they shall be opened, black Macbeth will seem as pure as snow, and the poor state esteem him as a lamb being compared with my confineless harms.
So this is interesting, right? Do you think he believes that, or do you think he's trying to get Macduff to say, oh yeah, you are a bad dude. You know, I know that about you. I mean, it's so weird.
I think he's trying to see, because if somebody is the kind of person who says, I want to save Scotland at any price.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to assess that price. What do you mean when you say for anything?
Yeah.
Are you willing to take somebody way worse just because they have the right blood in their veins?
Yeah.
I think he's testing in that way.
Right. I don't think he really thinks that he's worse than Macbeth.
That he's this way. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think this is a huge ruse to try how far Macduff would go.
Okay.
And we're going to see where he stops. Macduff stops at a certain point. He's like, okay, number one was okay. Number two was not so okay, but okay. And number three, forget it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he gets to that point.
Yeah.
So he says, so Malcolm's saying, like, I have these vices when they shall be opened. I just want to clarify, when my evils are exposed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have black Macbeth and antithesis, white snow, mm-hmm. right? We have these great antitheses and we have a lamb. And then my confineless harms. So what would be opposite of the beautiful little sweet lamb? Something horrible, some horrible monster.
Limitless, right? Horror.
Yeah, confineless means limitless, right?
And Macduff says, not in the legions of horrid hell can come a devil more damned in evils to top Macbeth.
So he can't even imagine somebody worse
right.
than him. not even everything coming out of hell could be worse than him. I grant him bloody. I agree. I grant him as I agree. Luxurious, avaricious, false, deceitful, sudden, malicious, smacking of every sin that has a name, but there's no bottom, none, in my voluptuousness. He just laid out a whole bunch of different sins that Macbeth is. Luxurious is lecherous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Avaricious is greedy. Mm-hmm. He lies. He cheats people. He changes his mind too quickly. He's malicious is evil, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With intent. Evil with intent is malicious.
Yes. But then he starts to outline his sins. And the one he starts with is voluptuousness, which is lust. So there's no bottom to my lust. You're going to see. I cannot seem to stop myself from covet every single woman that comes around. There's no bottom, none, in my voluptuousness. Your wives, your daughters, your matrons, and your maids could not fill up the cistern of my lust. And my desire, all continent impediments would o'erbear that did oppose my will. Oh my God. You guys wanted dick jokes and like, you know,
imagery.
Nasty, sexy imagery. Here it is. Holy fuck. He's like, I would take all the wives, daughters, matrons, old ladies, right? Maids, little girls, fucking all of them couldn't fill up the cistern, which is a great image. It's a septic tank, which means like where all the shit goes, right? So he's equating his desire with filth. He's filthy. And my desire, all continent impediments, that means all containing walls.
Overflow.
It would just overrun anybody trying to keep me in. And that did oppose my
dick.
Will, which is my dick. My dick is going to into every fucking cunt in that country.
Yep. I'm insatiable.
Yeah. I'm insatiable. And so then he finishes by saying, better Macbeth than such an one to reign.
Boundless intemperance.
Yeah, he's like, holy fuck, that's bad. Jesus Christ. Intemperance is sexual appetite, right? So he's like, Jesus, that's awful.
Boundless intemperance in nature is a tyranny. It hath been the untimely emptying of the happy throne and fall of many kings. But fear not yet to take upon you what is yours.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Midline, he changes his mind.
Yep.
There's a period after the word kings, and then he has the word but. Complete direction changer. He's like, wow, that is terrible, but.
Don't be afraid to take what's yours.
But it's okay. The country belongs to you. So if all the cunts in the country belong to you, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I can live with that. Right?
Woo!
Yeah, and Macduff really like sort of reasons it through for himself here. Like, okay, well, maybe, yeah.
But fear not yet to take upon you what is yours. You may convey your pleasures in a spacious plenty and yet seem cold. The time you may so hoodwink. Hoodwink.
That's a great word, right? Yeah, you can fool everybody by, you know, appearing to be chaste. Cold is chaste.
Yeah.
You might be able to blind everybody because they look at you and they go, oh, he's the king and it's great. So convey, we have cun, right? Cunt. Yeah. In spacious, big, wide, beautiful, juicy vaginas, right? Plenty. Yeah,
many,
there's lots.
Many.
There's so many of them. Yeah. It's fine. You know, I'm sure it'll be fine.
And you can still look chaste.
And you can still come off as a good guy.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if this is she's dead at this point, but if this is a slight to Queen Elizabeth. Because she claimed to be the virgin queen, but everybody knew she was fucking people.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. So I felt just because you're queen, you could have all the guys you want and nobody can say shit about it.
Right. Yes. Because we'll off with their heads.
Right.
Right.
They have to go, yes, your virgin majesty. Right.
Ooh.
So that's interesting. And yeah. Then he goes on to say how many women would be happy to fuck you.
We have willing dames enough. There cannot be that vulture in you to devour so many as will to greatness dedicate themselves, finding it so inclined.
So he's like, I'm sure there must be plenty of women willing to fuck you because you're king. And that was true of like all these kings, King Henry VIII. I mean, think about that, right?
Yeah.
He had so many mistresses just because of who he was.
Right. And that vulture in you, bird, 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 bird.
Yeah, bird, right? Bird. Ooh, there that's cannot a rough be. Bird.
Right? There cannot be that vulture in you to devour so many as will to... So there are so many that'll open their legs for you. You can't possibly go through them all.
Yes, I can. So Malcolm's like, okay, so he can pardon lust. Let's see what else I can throw at him. With this, there grows, in my most ill-composed affection, such a staunchless avarice that, were I king, I should cut off the nobles for their lands, desire his jewels and this other's house, and my more having would be as a sauce to make me hunger more, that I should forge quarrels unjust against the good and loyal, destroying them for wealth. And now he's on to avarice, which is greed.
Greed. And stanchless is bloodless, right?
Yeah, and also...
Bloodless greed?
Yeah, insatiable, right? Yeah, like I am coldly... covetous, right?
Yeah. And I'll take everything I want.
Yeah.
Other people's houses, other people's jewels. I'll cause fights among people so that I can get more of their stuff.
Yeah. And cut off the nobles, literally cut off their heads, right?
Yeah.
So I could be the death of a whole lot more nobles just because I want all the land for myself.
And Macduff cuts him off. This avarice sticks deeper, grows with more pernicious root than summer seeming lust, and it hath been the sword of our slain kings. Yet do not fear, Scotland hath, I mean, really.
Yeah. So like, again, in the middle, he changes. It's like he has to think it through for himself. So this avarice, he's like, wow, fuck, that's bad. Sticks deeper. And pernicious root, it's more deadly. Whereas lust now seems like summertime. Like lust is like, lust is
that's
fine.
Light.
I don't care. I don't,
playful.
It's playful and cute and sweet. And compared to this kind of greed.
Yeah, right.
And summer also being a time that passes, right? It's the middle of your life. Lust is about the middle of your life. And when you hit August, autumn, and winter, then you start to grow more reasonable, maybe. So
maybe.
We could deal with lust. But this is bad, right?
Yeah.
So it hath been the sword of our slain kings, because when kings do this kind of thing to their nobles, the nobles rebel. And so they kill him, right?
They kill the king.
Yeah.
Right. Revolution.
And then he changes. And then he changes. But maybe we can make it work.
Do not fear. Scotland hath foisons?
Foisons, yeah. It's also in the Tempest, that word. But harvest something, foisons plenty. It's the song that the goddesses sing.
Oh, yes.
So it means harvests and, harvests and strengths and, bounty. Yeah.
Yet do not fear. Scotland hath foisons to fill up your will of your mere own. All these are portable with other graces, Wade.
Yeah. So he's like, okay, these faults could maybe be okay if we can weigh them against all your good parts.
Yeah.
Right? Please tell me you have good parts. Poor Macduff. He doesn't know what to do with this, right?
Yeah.
And Malcolm's like, but I have none. The king becoming graces as justice, verity, temperance, stableness, bounty, perseverance, mercy, lowliness, devotion, patience, courage, fortitude, I have no relish of them, but abound in the division of each several crime, acting it many ways. Nay, had I a power, I should pour the sweet milk of concord into hell, uproar the universal peace, confound all unity on earth.
Oh, Scotland! Scotland.
Yeah. He doesn't know what else to say. He's like, oh my God. God.
But, right? I have none. I have none. The king becoming graces, meaning the ones that you expect a king to have, right? What a king should be.
And he starts listing them. In case you're listening out there, King James.
You're right. This is how you should act.
Wow, that's quite a list. Like three lines worth of adjectives. Jesus. Yeah, nobody can live up to that. I mean, maybe there's that too. Holy crap. Maybe Malcolm's like, maybe I'm not king material. I mean, if this is king material, that's way too much to ask.
Yeah, I cannot do.
Yeah, so maybe he's resistant because he doesn't think he's worthy.
Yeah.
Even if he's a good person. Like, okay, he says Macbeth was one thought honest.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, you guys thought he was a good guy.
Yeah.
If I'm a good guy, will I turn into that? That's very possible that he's just afraid.
But pour the sweet milk of Concord into hell sounds like, yes, he might be afraid, but he is painting this picture. Like, I'm going to take all the harmony and peace in the kingdom and pour it into hell.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't sound like he's afraid. It sounds like he's poking the beast. I don't know.
But there is that scene in Lord of the Rings, right? With Cate Blanchett when she was like reaching for the ring. And would I become corrupt and horrible if I had that kind of power? That must be a fear of somebody who's considering.
Oh, I'm sure.
What kind of person will I be on the other side of this?
Yeah. Could be a really interesting way of play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally legitimate. Like, that's why the right people don't go into politics, right? Right? That's why the people that we would want to see as president don't show up to want to be president, because they're like, being president makes a person horrible.
Yes.
Right?
You have to do horrible things.
Yeah. Things that you aren't proud of, things that you cannot reconcile to your own character. Yeah. If such a one be fit to govern, speak. I am as I have spoken.
Fit to govern? No, not to live, oh nation miserable, with an untitled tyrant, bloody sceptered. When shalt thou see thy wholesome days again, since that the truest issue of thy throne, by his own interdiction, stands accursed or accursed?
Accursed, I think.
Accursed.
By his own interdiction stands accursed.
Okay. And does blaspheme his breed.
So horrible. This is bad for Scotland because it's already got an untitled
tyrant who has his scepter by blood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love the repetition of sounds in untitled tyrant, right?
Tyrant.
So great. He's repeating there, emphasizing. Yeah. And then we have this word interdiction, which is so interesting. An interdiction was a church ruling that prevents a person from taking the sacrament because they are unsavable. So if the Catholic Church tells you they can save everybody, they can't. They will actually shut some people out and go, no, you're too bad. You're not allowed to take the sacrament because we don't think you can be saved. And we want everybody to think that everyone's going to heaven. Isn't that wild? So that's what an interdiction is. And so Malcolm has given himself an interdiction, banning himself from ruling Scotland by uttering all these things. And blaspheme his breed. He curses his father's line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wild.
Thy royal father was a most sainted king. The queen that bore thee oftener upon her knees than on her feet. I mean, they mean praying, but...
They mean praying, but then the next line is a little sketchy, right?
Yeah. Died every day she lived. Had orgasms every
she
day
had she had orgasms
lived.
Every day.
Oh, fare thee well. These evils thou repeatest upon thyself have banished me from Scotland. Oh, my breast, thy hope ends here.
Oh, that's incredible. So he's like, I can't even go back to Scotland now because I took this huge risk to come and see you. And now that you can't be king, I can't even return.
Right.
How awful is that? And then, oh, my breast, my poor heart, the best hope for Scotland is dying with me.
Yep.
He knows that he is you're the last hope, right? Help me on Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I was just going to say, you're my only hope.
You're my only hope, right? Yeah. I mean, Malcolm, I think, is finally convinced that he's the guy, right? Macduff, this noble passion child of integrity, hath from my soul wiped the black scruples, reconciled my thoughts to thy good truth and honor. All right.
I believe you.
This noble passion. Actually, that's a character direction for Macduff, because noble passion is a huge thing. So Macduff's not just speaking these lines just quietly.
No.
He's having a meltdown. Huge. Child of integrity, that means it's born out of truth. I believe the words that you're saying now. So that description of Macduff is kind of an antithesis with these next two words, which is devilish Macbeth.
Macbeth,
so right. We have angel Macduff with devilish Macbeth. Devilish Macbeth, by many of these trains hath sought to win me. Trains being plots or traps.
Okay.
He sent many other people like this, right?
Yep.
Hath sought to win me into his power, and modest wisdom plucks me from over-credulous haste. I can't be like readily believing everybody who comes to me, because
this has happened multiple times.
Yeah. And many of them were treacherous. But God above, deal between thee and me. So now he's putting it in God's hands. He's like, okay, I'm going to choose to trust you. And please, God, protect me. For even now, I put myself to thy direction and unspeak mine own detraction. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to let you tell me what to do now. And I'm going to recant, unspeak. Right. Okay?
Yep. Take back the things, what I said.
Take back the things, the terrible things, detractions, the terrible things I said against myself. Here, abjure the taints and blames. Taints? Here, abjure the taints and blames I laid upon myself. Great repetition of A's there, right?
Yeah,
taints
yeah.
and blames I laid upon myself. A, A, A. So it's like, okay, it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah. I got this. We're doing this.
It's all right. We're bringing our A game. For strangers to my nature. Yeah, right? He still mm-hmm. has those A's,
A-A's.
Right? Long A's. Big long A's. I am yet unknown to woman. I'm a virgin.
Right. So I never dipped my dick.
I never dipped my dick, and I'm not this lustful beast that I said I might have been. Never was forsworn. I never lied.
Lied.
I've never lied or made a promise that I couldn't keep. So if he promises to come with you, it's going to be a big promise,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to keep it. Scarcely have coveted what was mine own. I barely even desired my own stuff. I don't desire other people's stuff.
Right.
At no time broke my faith, would not betray the devil to his fellow, and delight no less in truth than life.
Mm-hmm.
So truth is everything to me, and I had to know the truth
right.
about you. My first false speaking was this upon myself. First time I ever told a lie was right now. What I am truly is thine and my poor country's to command. Whither indeed, before thy here approach, old Seward with 10,000 warlike men already at a point was setting forth. So like even before you got here, Seward was on his way with his 10,000 guys.
Plans have already been made. They're underway.
Yeah. I got you, man. I got your back. It's okay. Now we'll together, and the chance of goodness be like our warranted quarrel. So may the chance of success be as great as our claim is warranted, is just, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you silent? It's like the stupidest question ever, right? He's like, hello, Macduff, snap out of it.
Right? Such welcome and unwelcome things at once. 'Tis hard to reconcile.
Yeah, he's like, I
my
I don't
head
know
is
what
spinning.
To do with
yeah. God.
And then we have this weird little doctor piece. I'm actually going to cut through that and just tell you about it because it's weird. This doctor comes in and it's just a chance for them to talk about Edward the Confessor, who was the king at the time of Macbeth. And so it's a way to compare him with what there is in Scotland. They said that he was so pious that he could cure people by the touch. And so people would come to him with a sickness called the evil, which was scrofula. And it was called the king's evil because they thought that the touch of a king could cure it, which is really weird. And so Malcolm has seen this king perform this kind of miracles. And this king says that anyone who follows me, I can transfer this kind of miraculous curing ability to him. So my sense is that Malcolm reveres this English king and would do anything for him. So he's going to be in huge debt to him for sending him all these troops as it is, right?
Yeah.
So when Malcolm succeeds, spoiler, as he will, because we know this is a tragedy, so our buddy Mac has to die. Sorry, but he does. When Malcolm succeeds, we have to remember that he's going to be in great debt to the King of England. So we're going to let you hear from our friend Cole for a moment, and then we will be back with the last bit of the scene, which is really, really cool and interesting. And Cole happens to be playing Macduff. So here's Cole.
And I'm very happy to be here.
We're very happy to have
you. This is so unusual for us because we've only been, we've done other interviews, but not on this platform. So it's fun to see your face right there. Yeah.
So Diana's still in Italy, Aaron's still in Nyack, and Cole just got back to Rockland County.
Hailing from Palisades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have lived there your whole life, right?
That's correct.
Palisades, yeah.
Born and raised, yep.
Shout out to Palisades.
Tell us a little bit about your history with Shakespeare as a start off.
So my history with the company, with the Children's Shakespeare Theater, started when I was probably about 5 or 6 years old. Started as a child. The local church used to host a daycare. And I remember seeing the sets, these gorgeous sets. And I was curious. I didn't know what was going on. So I asked my daycare instructor, Cass, I asked her, what's going on here? And she said, oh, they're putting on a performance later tonight. You're certainly welcome to come. So I did. My mother took me. I sat in the front row, and I remember being amazed by everything. So over the next few years, I made it my mission to join. And eventually, when I was about 8, I got the opportunity. And I was in Macbeth, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
Yay. And what part did you play that very first time?
So my first time, I played the Bloody Apparition, and I was also Macbeth's servant, Satan.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And do you remember, like, what were your favorite parts about being in that first production? Can you remember?
Oh, certainly. I actually started to write an essay about this for college admissions. I'll definitely share that with you guys later. But I think what impressed me most was the sword fights, the combat.
Yeah.
At the time, we had fake blood.
Yeah.
And it was fucking awesome. Yeah. It's one of my fondest memories as a kid.
Being covered in blood.
I remember you. Yeah.
Yep. Covered, drenched in fake blood.
And you loved it. And you went out like with your hands held high, like, rawr!
That's right.
Funny. I totally remember like watching it because I used to love sneaking out to watch a little bit out in the audience. You know, I have that picture in my head of you coming out.
My family was horrified. They had no idea.
They're like, good God, what Satan worshiping cult are you here?
I think your mother knew what to expect though, right? I mean, she'd taken.
She didn't. She had no idea. So despite seeing some of the tech rehearsals, she had missed that scene with me drenched in blood. So I think Livy Bartel actually had to apologize after the show. She's like, I'm so sorry. you didn't know what was going on. You were caught unawares.
Well, she probably took it upon herself to apologize. She probably didn't need to.
Yes.
You know.
I don't think it was that serious.
It wasn't quite that terrible.
No. Do you remember?
I enjoyed it.
Do you remember as a wee child watching the play Macbeth when you came?
Don't know if I ever saw a production of Macbeth. I'm sure there were productions.
Yeah, you did.
But that, it would, did I?
Yeah, that was one of the first ones you saw. Because your mom was sitting in the front row. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, yeah. With the wets. Yes.
Right.
I do remember this.
See, we remember it because we remember, I remember Diana saying to your mother, are you sure you want to sit in the front row? Because there's a murder that takes place right where you're sitting, like right in front of you.
Yeah, and your mom goes, it's okay. I'll just give him a hug. I'm like, okay.
Thanks, Mom.
Oh, my God.
Cocaine.
Yeah, so it's like a really intimate setting, right? So when horrible, ugly things like that happen, you really feel it, right? Because it's right in front of you.
Can't escape it.
There's no fucking getting away from it. What were some of your other favorite times of working with Shakespeare?
That first play, Macbeth, was certainly life-changing. It was such a unique experience. Just, I was so happy to be a part of the company finally. And I had all these older kids acting as role models. And I remember them teaching me quite a few things and taking me under their wing. So that was an incredible experience. But I also loved going to Canada.
Right. Talk about that.
Which I'm sure you remember, Diana, with the World's Festival of Children's Theater. But we performed As You Like It there. And it was amazing. We got to see all these different theater groups from different countries. I remember being chummy with the Russians and their theater group, the Piano Theater.
Yeah.
We hung out with them a lot, which was so cool because they were a deaf theater. It was just such a great experience because you got the opportunity to talk to people of different cultures and nationalities, things you would never necessarily get to see as, you know, a younger child. You know, I'd never left the country. That was my first time.
I love that.
So do you think about, like, say, in this whole Ukraine crisis and stuff like that, have you thought about the kids? Because we did meet kids from the Ukraine, right?
Yeah, I have thought about that.
Yeah. And, like, what are they doing now? And they're teenagers, right? So are any of them in the army? Or, I mean, I think about that sometimes. What about favorite roles or anything like that? Like, you've gotten to play some really good ones with big, big, juicy, huge, gigantic speeches.
I truly have. But I think it was those roles when I was younger. They were the ones I enjoyed the most.
Yeah.
I remember my time in Scapin very fondly, which was, of course, a version of Molière's play. I really don't think you could beat Durand. I mean, being dragged around in a bag by no one can. Oh, my goodness.
That was so cool. So just...
It really was.
A little context. Cole played a master who was really nasty to his servants. And so the servant somehow contrived to get him to go into a bag because he said, "You're in trouble. You're in danger. Here, jump in this bag. I'll save your life." Right? So Cole is like, what? Like, you were like 3 feet tall?
Oh, yeah.
And you jumped into this giant bag. And then the servant swings him around, beats him up and everything. And Cole gets out of the bag the first rehearsal. And I said, "Cole, are you okay?" And you're like, "It was like Space Mountain." It's so funny. And I'm like, his mom's going to kill me for this. Oh, my God. So what is it like studying Shakespeare in the classroom?
So I've had positive experiences, and I've also had negative experiences.
So what makes the good ones good and the bad ones bad?
I find the more knowledgeable teacher is on the subject, the more enjoyable it is. In middle school, and I believe my freshman and sophomore years, I had teachers who were really interested and passionate about Shakespeare. We actually put on the plays, we performed the script, we had props, everything, the whole nine yards. But as I got older, junior year specifically, teacher wasn't so into it. We didn't act out the script, we read it. She acknowledged that it would be tough, boring.
Boring?
She said boring?
She said boring. I'm not joking.
See, that's someone who doesn't understand why we're studying Shakespeare.
Exactly. It was just disheartening to hear.
Yeah, especially for someone with as much experience as you. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So what play did you read junior year?
It was Macbeth.
I know.
Boring. Fucking unbelievable.
Question mark.
No.
Unbelievable.
No way.
I know. The nerve of her.
Wow.
So here's a little message. Here's a little message, Teacher Pooh. The message is, first of all, if you find it boring, you'd better learn how to figure out why the fuck you're teaching it. And then, because telling your students that something is boring is setting them up to not be engaged with it. And of all the goddamn plays to say boring about, Macbeth, which is so psychologically dramatic and physically dramatic, and there's so much to talk about in terms of human experience in this play. Oh my God, it makes me so angry. Teachers, don't ever do that. Don't do
Please,
that.
Guys.
If you don't understand why you're teaching Shakespeare, figure it out before you get in the fucking classroom.
Bravo, Aaron.
It makes me mad.
Well, but it's also like anything. Like, it could have been any book, you know? Like, okay, so I know that plenty of people don't like Jane Austen. So, but if you walk into the classroom and you go, we're going to be doing Pride and Prejudice and it's really horrible, then you've created a whole classroom of kids who think it's going to be horrible, right? Yeah.
Right.
So it's not just Shakespeare. It's
Where's
just
the
like,
opportunity to discover? Remember, teachers, we said we might be a little mean to you?
Yeah, but we're definitely going to be mean to you on this one.
I mean, this is ridiculous. How do you expect... Cole, why do we still study Shakespeare?
Because it's relevant to today. The themes are timeless.
Woo!
Yeah. So while you were starting to read Macbeth, for instance, like, did you see places where you could see yourself and the character that you're going to be playing?
Yes.
So one thing, like, how are you parallel to Macduff in one way?
Well, to be fair, at the time, I did not know I would be playing Macduff in the production.
Yeah, when you were reading. Sure. But now, rereading it now.
How do I feel about playing Macduff?
Like, where do you see parallels or draw
Where do
draw
I see parallels?
Ties with, between you and the character?
Like, yeah.
Well, he's certainly passionate about his family, as we're going to discuss later
today.
Yeah,
that's totally something about you, right?
But what I liked most was he's this warrior. You know, he's this strong, inspiring leader, which I think I'm going to enjoy playing.
And he's loyal.
Yeah.
Yes, he's loyal as hell. Yeah.
Not unlike you.
Oh, Aaron, come on.
No, it's true. It's true.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah, and I have always firmly believed that a part chooses a person for some reason. It is brought to you as a great gift. And whether that means it's a really huge, horrible challenge and that you have to go through it because you're meant to say those words for some reason, or whether it's because it's something that's going to highlight and brighten something that you already are and show the world something that you already are. You know, I think that that happens. And so I think Macduff coming to you, Cole, of all people, that...
It's no coincidence.
No, that ferocity about protecting family and caring so much about the people that you love, it's not a coincidence.
Agreed.
Definitely. So when you read Macbeth in the classroom, then what happened? Did anything good come out of that? Or were there other kids who were like, hey, this is fucking awesome?
That was the best part of reading the script. Some of my friends got into it.
Nice.
Which was cool. One of my buddies performed his entire part in a Scottish accent, which was entertaining.
Yeah.
We all loved it.
Yeah, of course.
For the entire fourth act, he played Macbeth in a Scottish accent.
That's very funny.
I love that.
It was fucking amazing.
Right. And it probably made people laugh and have a good time,
oh,
but also really listen.
Much to the chagrin of our teacher.
Well, you know what? Fuck that teacher.
Yeah. Honestly. Well, you can't possibly think it's boring after that, right? If the kid himself doesn't think so. That's funny. So do they come to you? Do your friends come to you sometime and go, dude, help me out? What is this?
Yes, it does happen. One of my good friends was interested in joining the company. I'm not sure it worked out, but they do ask me about the text from time to time.
And so what kind of tricks and things do you tell them? Like, how do you give them an inroad and try to help them out and try to help them like it the way you like it?
I find it helps to know the story beforehand.
Yeah.
You definitely would read up on the text, maybe read a summary. Mm-hmm. I always find that to be helpful. I also think context has a lot to do with it. You have to look at the context of the scene, how the characters feel, their motivations.
Do you do that when you prepare for a play?
Yes, definitely.
You got to know, like, going in without, you know, approaching it cold. Do you do that for other books?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's hard to read Wuthering Heights without any context, you know?
You dropped Jane Austen earlier.
Yeah.
Pride and Prejudice was part of my summer reading, and it was a tough one.
Mm.
It truly was.
Yeah.
Listen, Aaron, I really loved the story, but I found those first few chapters to be very dry.
It's not unlike Shakespeare in that you have to get into the rhythm of the speaking.
Yeah.
You have to get into the way things are handled. And the thing that I love personally about Jane Austen is she was a brilliant holder up of societal norms that were ridiculous, right? So she as a woman of her time in particular, you know, women, they weren't supposed to do, well, they weren't supposed to write, but they weren't supposed to do it like she did it. She satirizes societal norms for women in particular in such a beautiful but subtle way. If you aren't used to it, it's hard to find the humor. It's hard to find the satire. It's hard. And it's only when the foppish male characters actually start to behave like that, that you go, oh, I get it.
Foppish. I like that.
But that's chapters.
Yeah. That's a good word.
It's chapters in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Jane Austen was definitely a pioneer.
Yeah, totally. And I understand why people don't like her. I mean, I love her, but I understand why other people don't like her. But again, what would the teacher say about why do we read Jane Austen?
Because it's relevant to today, same as Shakespeare.
Exactly. It's relevant today to today, especially with what's going on in terms of societal mores for women versus societal mores for men, right?
Yeah, Aaron, let me ask you this. Earlier you said you understand why people don't like her. Do you think it's because she talks about gender norms and stereotypes, or do you think it's because of the language?
Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the language. Because
it turns people off.
It turns people off because they don't get it. It's so stilted, the language. But that's how people spoke.
Yes.
What is that like? That's exactly like Shakespeare. People are turned off by the language, but that's how people spoke. And once you decipher the language and you get into the rhythm of it, it starts to be funny. And I don't think many people expect Jane Austen to be funny, but she is very funny, but it's subtle. It's subtle.
It is.
So it's the same thing. If that teacher understood why we read Jane Austen, she should fucking understand why we read Shakespeare. I got to get off my high horse about this teacher. I want to go kneecap her.
Wow.
I got close to doing that junior year.
Oh my God.
I just, you know, teachers have such power. You know, there are teachers who take that power that they have and they use it in the best possible way to share their love of subject. And then there are teachers who have that power and they just freaking abuse it. And I don't, like, why be a teacher then? Go be something else. Go be a lion tamer.
In a sliver of that, why teach Macbeth if you don't like it? There are plenty of other plays.
But I think that the curriculum is decided by the school. I don't think that the individual teachers get to say, I think.
Right. So then when my kid, we need to talk to the school board too. And we need to talk to the administrators too and say, look, you're not doing kids a favor if you have a teacher come and say, this is not what I like to teach. I don't want to teach it. Let them teach what their strengths are.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so one kid will have As You Like It this year instead of everybody else who has Macbeth. So what? So what? They're still getting the language, right?
Right. But I think a teacher who says Macbeth is boring is going to think any Shakespeare is boring.
Yeah. So do you think that's about fear, Cole? Are they afraid?
In what sense? Like, elaborate a little more.
Did you ever get the sense that that teacher was afraid that they were inadequate to teach that play because they didn't understand it?
Yeah, that could be a possible reason.
Because if you're afraid that, like, I'm going to look stupid doing something, or I'm going to not know what I'm doing, that's a very...
Shakespeare's by no means easy.
No.
It's complex.
Yeah.
The scripts. I think in this instance, that could be a possible motivator. With English last year, we didn't dive too deeply into anything. We didn't really examine any of the stories we were required to read or the text we were required to read.
Just plowing through them?
Yeah, exactly. I remember our first week, we were watching Sesame Street to teach certain... junior year.
Wow.
Junior year, and she was showing us Sesame Street to illustrate certain concepts.
Boy.
Yeah. That's when I knew it was going to be a long year.
What the actual fuck?
Aaron's about to blow.
Blowing. Definitely going.
Take a breath, Aaron.
Oh, my God.
Seriously.
I know. It's fucking embarrassing.
This year, do you have a teacher that you think is going to be good? Do you know?
Yes. I'm familiar with this teacher. He works closely with our school newspaper. He's a good guy, Mr. Stanford.
Oh my God, he's an awesome teacher.
Oh, you know him?
Yeah, Sven had him too.
Yeah,
he's been around a long time. Yeah. Mark Stan. Nice. Mark Stan. Shout out to Mark Stan.
Shout out to Mark Stan. I'm going to show him the podcast now.
Oh, good. Okay. Dude, I was interviewed and you got a good review there.
Yeah. Give you a shout out, man. You're welcome.
He's going to go, oh, fuck that. Diana Greene, man. Jesus, she's a problem person. Troublemaker. Fuck.
So wait, before we go on, I just want to know, what plays have you read in school, Cole? Which of Shakespeare's plays have you read in school?
Macbeth, A Midsummer's Night Dream, Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's
pretty standard. Do you know what were you're reading this summer? I mean, this year? Hamlet? Are you doing Hamlet?
I don't know.
Because you haven't had Hamlet yet, so it seems like it should be coming up.
That could come next.
Yeah.
The big one.
The big one. The longest boring Shakespeare play.
So not boring. All right, let's wrap this up. Well, okay, so the last...
Our questions that we sent you.
Yeah, can you remember a moment where you really understood a word or a scene in a whole new way?
I have the perfect example.
Okay, good.
Yeah, like an aha moment?
It was an aha moment. It was in Scapin, which we discussed earlier. One of my lines mentioned rape.
And you were all of what, 9 years old or something?
Yes, exactly. I believe I was 10.
Okay.
But I had no idea what rape was.
Of course.
And you and Noah Kinn took me aside and explained it in the best of ways.
Did we?
Yeah.
I cringe. I'm cringing.
You did it. No, don't. But after that, the scene made much more sense.
Yeah.
I actually knew what I was saying.
So have you been the ambassador for Shakespeare in your family? Like, were you the one that kind of made the rest of your family interested in Shakespeare?
Yes.
Or did you have anyone in your family that kind of was like, did they know about it before you came along?
Not really. So my grandparents, cultured, they've always been into theater and productions. So they often encouraged me to stick with theater and be a part of the company. But in my immediate family, not so much. It's kind of a standout. And now I'm happy to say that both me and Valencia.
Yeah, your sister.
You know, are prominent members of the company. And even my brother Jack, for those of you who don't know, my brother Jack has autism. He's on the spectrum.
Yeah.
But he loves the productions. He loves nothing more than coming to a show. The battles and the fight scenes.
That's so awesome.
Which are entertaining as hell. I can see why he likes it so much. But more than anything else, Shakespeare has created this sense of community. Mm-hmm. Particularly when we started out, when I was a younger kid, when Diana was director of the company. It was this small little group, you know, in Palisades, in my immediate neighborhood. And being younger, it's not really like I knew so many people. But after that, it opened so many doors. And I got close to so many kids who were right in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
In the best time.
Yay.
Even now, you know, it creates this little niche. Kids can geek out and talk about Shakespeare and all sorts of things. It's such a unique experience. And I don't really think I realized it when I was younger. But really, it's, as I mentioned before, it's life-changing. I think about what I would have been if I didn't go through this company. I would hate it, not having Shakespeare's work revealed to me and never getting to experience it, which would suck. It's almost like a safe haven. It's independent.
Yes, right? I think that was such a huge gift to both of my kids, who were not typical kids for any number of reasons. Not typical kids, you know? But they found their people in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It was huge.
But, you know, being there, seeing your friends perform, it makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Like you said. And that's the thing, right? Like, for every kid who's in a show, their friends come to watch it. So the truth is, even the kids who don't understand the language whatsoever love watching their friends on stage, and they get to experience being part of that magic that happens when you're an audience member watching Shakespeare, where the characters are so up close to you and maybe they're speaking directly to you. And it.
So the message for all you listeners is go see a show. If you have a chance, it'll make all the difference.
Come see Macbeth.
Come see Macbeth.
March, please.
Yes.
When is it?
Palisades.
Tell them the dates.
Church.
Middle of March sometime?
Yes.
It's the middle two weekends of March 2023, and we'll shout it out later as we get into our later episodes, definitely. Yeah, we'll be like, hey, remember Cole? Come see Cole. Cole, you want to say anything more about McDuff?
What I liked about that scene is that McDuff seems to experience a wide array of emotions. It goes from anger to sadness. He feels destitute. He feels terrible. He's abandoned his children. Guilt. It's another prominent emotion. Grief.
Grief.
Yeah. I really think I'm going to enjoy acting.
It's a huge challenge, that scene, to go from like
yeah.
0 to 100 on so many levels. So many different things. Yeah. And so he's like the bust out hero that you meet, you know, late into the story, who's going to save the day kind of thing. Right. And you don't really, you know, he's not a factor early on. And, you know, you get to see him experience the horror of the king being killed, right? But then he kind of fades away for a little bit because he's voluntarily excusing himself from those. He doesn't want to be part of that court, right?
And his absence is remarked upon.
Yes, it is.
And punished in a huge way, right?
Yeah.
Fine, you're not here, right? You're not here, I can take it out on you anyway, right? Yeah. Yep. So vicious. And we were saying in the scene prior or two episodes before that we thought that this scene, I mean, that the killing of the McDuff family might be the place where the audience separates themselves from Macbeth. You know, like they're like, dude, we cannot, we can't hang with you anymore. You're too bad.
Yeah.
You know, you have taken one step way too
far. That's a great observation, Diana. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they need a new hero, right?
Right, exactly. Enter McDuff.
Yes. They need someone to identify with. Yep.
Right. And I think the audience does identify with Macbeth for a long time, even though he's horrible.
Oh, yes.
For a long time, because he's tortured. You can follow with that torture, right? You can follow along with all of that torment that he experiences until this.
It's the tipping point.
Right. So they need somebody to pull them out of that sadness at losing, you know?
Here comes Macduff.
Like, I had this faith.
With the English army.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With the English armor. Whoa. That is like very layered and very scary in a way, because what country are we talking about? We're talking about Scotland, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for England to come in and be the save the day for Scotland is not so good, because too many other times they were not the save the day for Scotland. They were the villains.
I can't help but think there's a little bias.
A little.
Just a little. Subtle bias.
Yeah.
What are you saying? I just came from Scotland. I love them. Okay.
No, just that he's an English playwright, you know?
Of course, England is going to be
here. Here we come to save the day.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So it's a little dicey there. You're like, England's going to save us at what price?
Right.
Sure.
But I think McDuff is willing to pay a lot of prices, right?
That's true. Especially after the scene we were talking. He's going to avenge his children and his wife by any means.
By any means, yep. He's willing to accept a lot to have somebody else besides Macbeth, right?
But also a rightful person. You know, I mean, I think that's what it is for Macduff. You know, there are rules, and we follow those rules. That's what we do. And, you know...
Obviously, he has a fealty to the kin. He respects the lineage. He recognizes that, yes, his son should succeed.
Right. Set things to rights.
I'm going to throw one last Vaughn Macbeth thing at you.
Please.
If you could cast anybody in the whole world, doesn't matter if they're an actor, to play Macbeth, who do you think would make an interesting
I was hoping you would ask that.
Oh, good. Okay.
I spent a while preparing. I had several ideas, but I think the best one I came up with is a Game of Thrones themed production of Macbeth.
Yeah.
So we get Sean Bean, Emilia Clarke, Peter Dinklage, Kit Harington, all of them to play these roles.
So who's
I think it would be fantastic. I think it would be fantastic. So my thinking was that Sean Bean could be Macbeth, Emilia Clarke could be Lady Macbeth, obviously a strong heroine, and Kit Harington could be Macduff.
Nice.
Would you agree with that, Aaron?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll have a wonderful time rehearsing going to be excellent.
Man, I really enjoyed talking to you
Yay.
Guys.
We miss you.
This is awesome. You got to have me back on again, please.
Well, maybe after the show is down.
All right, Cole. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay, guys, thank you for having me on. Yay. Diana, Aaron, I'm so honored, really.
So glad.
Well, we love seeing you. We love listening to you.
Thanks for sharing all your insights.
Send our love to your family.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely, yes. Yay. Mom says hello.
All right, so enter the Thane of Ross.
Now Ross, you'll remember.
Macduff are cousins.
Right, and you'll remember that Ross was last seen in the Macduff castle, leaving Lady Macduff unprotected.
Abandoning her to her fate.
Macduff says, "See who comes here."
Malcolm, "My countryman, but yet I know him not." So, like, he can recognize him as a Scot, but he doesn't remember who he is, which is weird because he was in the first scene with them.
Well, maybe he's far enough away that he can't see clearly. I don't know. Macduff says, "My ever gentle cousin, welcome hither."
"I know him now. Good God, but times remove the means that make us strangers." So he's like, "Oh, right, I remember. And so God, betimes means quickly. Can you quickly take away all of the grief and the terrible things that make us strangers to our countrymen, right? "Sir, amen."
Macduff says, "Stand Scotland where it did?"
"Alas, poor country, almost afraid to know itself. It cannot be called our mother but our grave, where nothing but who knows nothing is once seen to smile, where sighs and groans and shrieks that rend the air are made, not marked." Yeah, so "alas, poor country" is similar to how Macduff talks in the beginning, right? Those first three lines have an extra beat in them. So Ross is very emotional from the get-go, right? He's very upset. And he uses the word mother, mother country, right? And it's we can't call it our country anymore, but we have to call it our grave, right?
Yeah.
And only the people who know nothing can even smile anymore, but those are few. And people shriek and groan, and they're made not marked, which means nobody pays attention to the shrieks and groans anymore because there's so many. Mm-hmm. "Where violent sorrow seems a modern ecstasy. The dead man's knell is there scarce asked for who." So the dead man's knell was the bell that was rung for
dies.
Somebody died. And nobody even asks
who's dead.
Who died anymore. Because it's everybody. "Violent sorrow seems a modern ecstasy." Modern ecstasy is common hysteria. So sorrow seems like some kind of form of hysteria because everybody's sad. "And good men's lives expire before the flowers in their caps, dying or ere they sicken."
Oh, relation. Too nice and yet too true.
"What's the newest grief?" That's Malcolm. "That of an hour's age doth hiss the speaker." It's so new that you can still hear people going, "Shh, don't say it." "Each minute teems a new one."
"How does my wife?"
"Why, well."
"And all my children?"
"Well, too."
"The tyrant has not battered at their peace."
Yeah, so this is really interesting that he doesn't say so right away, right? A direct question he can't answer.
Right.
And then we have this triple shared line, "Why, well, and all my children, well, too." It's almost like he's saying, "Well, well, well, like, how do I say this?"
Yeah.
It's almost like he's stalling, right?
Yeah,
stalling,
but it also makes me think Shakespearean doublespeak, well, as in they're in heaven, so they're well.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they're not alive.
Yeah, because he's going to say in a minute, they were well at peace. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not lying. He's not telling an untruth, but he's
equivocating.
He is equivocating. Exactly.
And he's going to use Macduff's words to try to make it sound better. Battered is a great choice of word because battering ram, right? That's how you get into a castle to do these kinds of things. So he broken down the door. Has he broken down the door? No. No, they were well at peace when I did leave them.
But
so that's also the truth. When I left them,
at peace.
They were alive.
But not a niggard of your speech. How ghost?
So that's a weird word. It just means miser, right? So don't hold back. Don't hold back on your
tell me. You're being very evasive here.
When I came hither to transport the tidings which I have heavily borne, there ran a rumor of many worthy fellows that were out, which was, to my belief, witnessed the rather, for that I saw the tyrant's power afoot. I came, he's got these H's, right? I have heavily borne, right? Mm-hmm. There was a rumor of people on the move against Macbeth, many fellows out on the move. And then he said, I believed it because I saw Macbeth raising an army, the tyrant's power afoot. People are moving to war. And then he pleads with Malcolm. Now is the time of help. Your eye in Scotland would create soldiers, make our women fight to doff their dire distresses.
Doff dire distress.
Like, come on. You've got to fucking come, right? Your eye in Scotland, just to see you Scotland, would make everybody turn into a soldier, right?
And even Malcolm women. Has a shared line with him. Yeah.
With Ross. Yeah, because he knows they're already on foot. So he's like, I don't need you to beg me anymore.
Right.
We're going, right? Doff their dire distresses. And Malcolm, be it their comfort, we are coming thither. Notice the we. Mm-hmm.
He is now a king.
Yes, it could be. In that first line, when he first says it, it could be me and Macduff and Seward, right? We.
Could
right?
be.
Mm-hmm. But in a moment, he's going to confirm that it's a royal we. We are coming thither. Gracious England hath lent us good Seward and 10,000 men. So if he uses us, he is definitely using the royal form of pronouns, right?
Yep.
An older and a better soldier, none that Christendom gives out. Would I could answer this comfort with the like, but I have words that would be howled out in the desert air where hearing should not latch them.
What concern they?
She's like, I wish I could comfort you too, but I have something horrible to say.
But just because I need to stick my two cents in, desert does not mean an arid, desolate place. It just means a deserted air.
Yeah.
That would be howled out in the desert air.
He wishes could deliver this message out into the air and nobody hear them. He doesn't want anybody to hear the words that he has to say. Right?
Yep. What concern they? The general cause? Or is it a fee grief due to some single breast?
The message meant for just one person, or a fee grief meaning the receiver often paid a messenger to get their message. So it was a particular individual message.
Hmm.
No mind that's honest, but in it shares some woe, though the main part pertains to you alone.
If it be mine, keep it not from me. Quickly, let me have it.
Let not your ears despise my tongue forever, which shall possess them with the heaviest sound that ever yet they heard.
I guess at it.
Your castle is surprised, your wife and babes savagely slaughtered. To relate the manner, we're on the quarry of these murdered deer to add the death of you. Merciful heaven! That's Malcolm. So on the quarry, that means the pile of dead creatures that have been killed, of these murdered deer, right? We have deer, D-E-E-R, but we hear D-E-A-R, right? These deer people that were murdered. If I had to tell exactly how they were killed, you would fall down dead too. And we'd have to add your body to the pile. And Malcolm's horrified, right? And then he turns to Macduff and he sees what he's doing. So this is a stage direction. What man? Ne'er pull your hat upon your brows. So like, don't pull your hat over your face. Let it out, right? Give sorrow words. The grief that does not speak whispers the o'erfraught heart and bids it break. He's like, don't pull your hat down over your face. You have to speak about this. If you don't, it's going to lodge in your heart and break your heart, your overburdened heart.
My children too?
Wife, children, servants, all that could be found.
And I must be from thence. My wife killed too.
I have said. Be comforted. So we have another triple charred line there. Macduff, he can't understand. Like, these words are not sinking in at all, right? And Ross is like, please don't make me say it again. And then Malcolm is now like, okay, we've got to deal with his grief because he doesn't look like he can go on, right? Be comforted. Let us make medicines of our great revenge to cure this deadly grief. And then there's like four beats of silence. Macduff has to process, right?
He has no children. All my pretty ones. Did you say all? Oh, Hellkite, all? What, all my pretty chickens and their dam at one fell swoop? Birds in Macbeth, birds.
Birds. Hellkite, right? We talked about kites a couple of episodes back, being those ravenous birds of prey. And they came down on the chickens, which are defenseless, right? Little domestic creatures. And their dam, their mom, at one fell swoop. And we have the movement of a bird, right? A deadly dive. That bird on bird, birds on birds do. Awesome bird imagery there. Dispute it like a man.
I shall do so. But I must also feel it as a man. I cannot but remember such things were that were most precious to me. Did heaven look on and would not take their part? Sinful Macduff, they were all struck for thee, not that I am, not for their own demerits, but for mine. Fell slaughter on their souls. Heaven rest them now.
Beautiful double entendres here. Dispute it like a man. I'm going to. Give me a fucking minute, right?
Yeah.
Stop telling me what to do. You're not king yet, God damn it.
Right.
Right?
And you don't have children, so
Yes, I love that. He hath no children. There's no way to have this kind of revenge on Macbeth. Because we can't go in and kill his children because he doesn't fucking have any.
Have any, right?
Wild, right? And then I cannot but remember such... I need to, like, live in the memory of them, how precious they were to me. I need a moment to honor them, right? And then sinful Macduff, it's my fault. Not that I am worthless thing.
Yep.
Not, N-A-U-G-H-T. I'm a worthless thing, not because they were bad people, but because of me and my lowness, right?
For my demerits, they were killed.
And then he lays them to rest, right? Heaven rest them. And Malcolm sees an inn here, right? Be this the whetstone of your sword. Let grief convert to anger. Blunt not the heart. Enrage it.
Oh, I could play the woman with mine eyes and braggart with my tongue. But gentle heavens, cut short all intermission, front to front. Bring thou this fiend of Scotland and myself within my sword's length. Set him. If he scape, heaven forgive him too.
So he's like, I'm not going to indulge in excesses of emotion now. I have a plan now, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to play the woman. I'm not going to cry too much. And I'm not going to brag either. I'm not going to be the big bragging man. Cut short intermission. So no more delay. Intermission.
Yep.
Front to front is face to face. But front is also your forehead. So like really close, right? Bring him this close to me. You just put him that close to me and I will fucking kill him. This fiend, this fucking guy, right?
Yep.
And if he escapes from me, that means heaven forgives him somehow. And Malcolm's like, yes, man, this tune goes manly. There's the theme, right? He's happy to see him play a man, be a man. Come, go we to the king. Our power is ready. Our lack is nothing but our leave. So the only thing we have to do is say goodbye. Macbeth is ripe for shaking, and the powers above put on their instruments. It means we are the tools that heaven is using to kill this fucking guy. Receive what cheer you may. The night is long that never finds the day.
Rhyming couplet,
yeah, but notice the first line of that rhyming couplet is a plus two. It's a long one.
Yeah.
Put on their instruments, receive what cheer you may.
Whoa, yeah.
It's really long.
Yeah.
So he's like, whoa, yeah. Energy, yeah. There's a lot of energy there. And then the night, there has never been a night so long that the day didn't come. And it's that great theme of nighttime. We have said that most of this play has taken place in the night.
Or even in the daytime where it looks like night because...
It looks like night. because the heavens are behaving strangely, yep. Right? So this reign of terror, this night of terror is coming to an end. Wow. All right, here come the good guys. Here come the saviors. And this happens so often in the history of England, right? Is that somebody comes from across the seas or, you know, France or England or Spain. Here they come to save poor England, right? From its internal inbred kings. Oh, boy.
All right.
That's exciting. From here, we go into Act 5, and everything catapults to a crazy ending.
Crazy. How can anyone find this boring?
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that.
What the? That just makes me so mad.
Teachers, if you don't understand why you're teaching Shakespeare, send us a note. Send Diana and me, or Diana or me, a note and say, I don't really truly understand why I'm teaching this. Can you help me? And you know what? Instead of being nasty about it like we are now. Right now, we will be supportive and loving, and we'll help you with the treasure hunt that is Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And you may not love it, but at least you'll understand why it's in the curriculum. We're happy, 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 happy to have that conversation.
Totally. And to help you find the delight in this work so that it doesn't feel like a giant burden to you.
There's a really good reason why it's in the curriculum.
And I'll give a shout out to a cool book that I'm reading right now that's called Mad for Shakespeare. And it's about like learning to love it from, you know, a young man's perspective into old age.
Mm.
And he's like, my father always talked about it and how great it was and all the stuff. And I never believed him when he was around. And then later, when I didn't have him to explain it to me, I learned it by myself and suddenly discovered, wow, I wish that I had had a chance to talk to my dad about this because it's awesome.
Yeah.
But he had to find it out with other people. And so. So you can make that discovery with your students right now.
Right. So, and here's another, and we've talked about, I think we talked about this in Romeo and Juliet all the way back in the first couple of episodes. And I think we talked about it with Liz when she came on, and, you know, she's a wonderful teacher. And one of the things that you can do is if you don't get it, if you don't understand it, learn it with your students.
Yeah.
Say to them, look, the district tells me I have to teach this play. I don't understand Shakespeare either. Let's figure it out together.
Together.
That's a great gift to give your students because they'll see that they're not expected to know everything because you, their teacher, don't know everything.
That's totally fine.
You could come up with some great ideas by just bouncing around and talking about it.
That just infuses your classroom with energy.
Yeah.
All right. That is your mission, people. Parents too, right? If your kids love something, go with it. Discover why. Just like Cole's parents did. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And they love it now. The whole bunch
of
them.
They love it. So this could be some delight that you'll discover too.
Yeah.
When your kid comes home from school and goes, I read this really cool play. I don't entirely understand it. Say, oh, hey, let's do that together. Let's try. I'll try. I'm willing.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And if you have a copy of the Riverside Shakespeare, the notes are right in there. But if you don't, just be mindful where you get your information. But like you can use Google to figure out what it is they're talking about.
Folger editions are good. Arden editions are good.
I would steer clear of the translation ones.
Yeah. Forget that. None of that no fear bullshit. We hate those.
Yeah.
All right, Erin, this is a long episode.
Oh, my God.
Okay, bye, guys.
Bye. Bye. Thanks for being here.
See you next time.
Bye.
On Fuck Shakespeare.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.